Welcome to Fact Checking Darwin, where scientific dishonesty is not tolerated. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to start this program out admitting that I feel like I have been an idiot for decades. I have allowed myself to be led around by the nose like a whole bunch of sheep by Darwin and the neo-Darwinists. The other day, I submitted an article having to do with how molecular biology is inconsistent with Darwin's theory because it's way too complicated. And I read his statement that I had been reading for literally decades. And then it just hit me all of a sudden. And that quote of his is, "If it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down." And then he goes on, "But I can find no such case." And all of a sudden, it hit me. I'm like, wait a minute. It's not my job to prove your theory wrong. If you want to have a scientific theory, it's your job to prove that it's right. And have we been so corrupted in our society? That's paramount to you are guilty until proven innocent. Science has never worked that way. So after that, I began to think, now wait a minute. Is there anybody who has proven that his theory is correct? Since that's the way it's supposed to work. And I only can come up with two examples of, quote, experiments that people have actually written and claimed are proof of Darwin's theory. And that is the experiments with Darwin's finches, which is actually more of an observation, and then the experiment with the peppered moths. And you'll still see those two examples used as proof in textbooks and literature and common books that are written now. And besides those two examples, it seems like everything else has just been people claiming that it's been highly tested. In fact, in one of my other podcasts, I mentioned that physicist who actually made the statement that Darwin's theory of evolution is the most highly tested theory in existence, which is pretty darn incredulous since you cannot test that theory. It's untestable. It has no predictability. But that seems to be the consensus of opinion, which is nothing but a faith argument. So I want to go over the two pseudo-experiments that people claim are proof of Darwin's theory. First, let's talk about what people now call Darwin's finches. In his book, he mentions these finches. It's other people who have taken that observation and turned it into what they want to consider as proof. When Darwin was wandering around the Galapagos, he noted variations of finches and their beak sizes. So he presented this as really evidence of natural selection. And that kind of raises another point. Well, we know natural selection works. So I can't blame him for that because that definitely is evidence of natural selection. But natural selection is not evolution. It's the neo-Darwinists really who have elevated that data from support of natural selection to unequivocal proof of evolution. So what these observations really consisted of was essentially it was a summarization of correlating evidence with finch beak sizes and different food sources. It was Wallace Arthur, who was the author of a book called Evolution, A Developmental Approach, that I quoted several times in my book, who stated that, quote, Whereas in the case of Darwin's finches, we are looking at the result of accumulated directional selection in the past, which has indeed contributed to the divergence of different species, end quote. So he is shifting the definition of natural selection and changing it into evolution. Then we have Peter and Rosemary Grant, and this is actually an observation that they made. They noted a 5% increase in beak size after a severe drought, which was conjectured to have occurred because only hard-to-crack seeds were available. Therefore, they believe that nature selected larger beak size. Well, okay, that's natural selection. You know, I'll give them that. However, there was a booklet published by the U.S. National Academy of Sciences which describes Darwin's finches as a, quote, particularly compelling example of the origin of species. However, there's a problem because the Grants weren't quite finished. They did further investigation, which is, you know, no one ever hears about this part, but, and I quote, the finch's beak size returned to normal after the range returned. No net evolution occurred. And how could it? How can you have evolution in a change in beak size in 1 year? You know, it's not just the beak size that has to change. It has attachments to the skull. Those have to change. The muscles have to change. And are we to think that all of these mutations are occurring within 1 year so that when the weather changes, all of a sudden things start mutating? And is it only the beaks that started mutating, or were mutations occurring all over the body? Because remember, now mutations have to be random. Or do they think somehow that a weather change just affected beaks because seeds changed? You know, none of it makes any sense. But unfortunately, not making any sense doesn't really seem to bother people. And so here are some more quotes. Jonathan Weiner's 1994 book, The Beak of the Finch, which called the observed change in beak depth, quote, the best and most detailed demonstration to date of the power of Darwin's process. So I suppose maybe he's been a little sneaky, and he called it a process, not a theory even. So, I don't know. Maybe he can try to crawl out from under that rock. But then there are other examples. Let's mention Mark Ridley's 1996 college textbook called Evolution. And like the Grants, Ridley states that Darwin's finches, quote, illustrates how we can extrapolate from natural selection operating within a species to explain the diversification of the finches from a single common ancestor. Ah, well, he made the mistake. There is no doubt that is evolution, because he said this came from a common ancestor. Well, I guess that ancestor was less than 1 year old. I don't get it. The experiment has nothing to do with observable facts. Frankly, if you're a scientist and you're using this, or you're reading this and you're believing this, this is embarrassing. Now, the other thing that people like to use is the myth of the peppered moth. And I guess it's the same thing. They're confusing natural selection with evolution. But this was actually an experiment that took place in England, because they noticed that peppered moths in England had changed from a lighter to a darker color over the previous century. So at least I guess that's long enough to have some common ancestors if they're going to be involved. And it was thought that that change occurred because dark moths were better camouflaged on the pollution-stained darker trees. So this guy named Kettlewell tested the hypothesis, and you're just going to love this. Kettlewell released light and dark-colored moths onto the tree trunks and watched as the birds ate the more conspicuous light-colored moths. So only the dark-colored moths survived. Okay, well, that's natural selection. There's no doubt about that. That's fine. However, people then try to extend the boundaries of natural selection and turn it into evolution. And you know, before we even get into demonstrate that, there was, however, a problem with the experiment, just like there was with Darwin's lovely finches. In the 1980s, researchers discovered that the official story was flawed by a very important fact that peppered moths don't normally rest on tree trunks. Instead, they fly around at night and then hide up underneath the branches during the day. And now, and if that doesn't mean anything to you, if you think, well, so what? They still got picked off. Unfortunately, where did all those textbook photos come from on the tree trunks? Oops, they were all staged. So the researchers, who are such fantastic scientists and believed in this fantastic scientific theory, decided that to expedite things, they would glue some peppered moths onto the tree trunks. Now, this would bother several people, and I would think it would bother academics especially. But, of course, you're not going to see that. So here are some quotes about how fantastic this theory is. Despite, one, it doesn't prove what it set out to prove, and it was fake. But in any case, Bob Ritter, he wrote, "High school students are still very concrete in the way they learn. We want to get across the idea of selective adaptation. Later on, they can look at work critically." He wrote this in response to someone noting that, excuse me, they staged the experiment. So apparently, well, high school students are too stupid to figure out what's really going on. Just like the rest of us are too stupid to know what's going on. And unfortunately, in Scientific American, which I thought was a pretty reputable journal, called Kettlewell's experiment, Darwin's Missing Evidence. And unfortunately, Kettlewell did make the giant leap from natural selection to evolution. And he stated that the industrial melanism is the most striking evolutionary change ever actually witnessed in any organism. Yeah, okay. But he's not alone. I was going to say he's not the worst, but let's go on to some other people. The British geneticist, P.M. Shepherd, called the pepper moth experience, are you ready? Quote, "the most spectacular evolutionary change ever witnessed and recorded by man." Nice. He's not alone either. I mean, these two have a bigger club. The evolutionary biologist C. Well Wright called the experiment, are you ready? Quote, "the clearest case in which a conspicuous evolutionary process has actually been observed." Boy, they do not hesitate. They do not hesitate, and they do not like being questioned. And I love this. Arthur, with his book, The Evolution, A Development Approach, defends the peppered moth experiment. Despite people saying that, hello, it was staged. And this is what he says. And this, boy, this tells you everything you need to know about neo-Darwinists. Quote, "however, it has also been criticized. Some of the criticism have come from the creationist camp and are not worth spending time on," end quote. Is that not the most embarrassing, childish, whiny, adolescent response you could have? And this guy's a scientist. All these people are scientists. It's a good thing they're not physicians or lawyers or architects or engineers. They'd be sued for malpractice, and they wouldn't even want to take it to court. They would just settle. So Darwin himself gave us all the ammunition we need to prove that his theory is not even scientific. And it's kind of aggravating that it took me this long to figure it out. What other science, what other theory must be proven wrong to not be accepted? Really, it's really frustrating. But I guess people probably read that, and like I have for all these years, and just kind of intuitively, you know, this isn't right. Well, none of it's right. None of it matches the observations. But we just go along because, frankly, we're just beaten over the head. Too much high school, too much college, too many pseudo-intellectuals telling us one thing. And at least, thank heavens, most of us see the light. These poor slobs, they don't get it. And obviously, they're never going to get it. Anyway, I guess I'm going to end it now. I'll try not to get too frustrated, which is pretty hard to do. Join us in the next podcast as we absolutely break down Darwin's theory of evolution, even though that's not our job. I may change my whole sentence to that henceforth. I don't know.